This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. Our program available all over the world. We're also, I was mentioning the different ways you can get our show from Sirius XM to commercial and non-commercial stations, our Pacifica affiliates. We're live on YouTube. We're live on Facebook. We're live on Patreon. We're on Free Speech TV, on Dish Network, DirecTV, Sling TV, Roku. We're also on TuneIn. And in fact, if you got one of those little Alexa boxes, you can say, Alexa, play Tom Hartmann. While we're live, it'll bring the show up. And there are free podcasts over at Apple and, of course, regular podcasts available on our website, TomHartmann.com. Just an FYI. How Trump, Joe Connison writing in the National Memo, how Trump will rig his own case. This is the elephant in the room that is only rarely mentioned in these hearings. And when it is mentioned, it's mentioned in a tangential or peripheral way, because the senators, the Democratic senators who bring this up, are trying to, engage in decorum. I mean, forget that John Cornyn this morning, when Cory Booker said, I'm going to release these papers anyway. I mean, this was, and then every other Democrat on the committee said, me too, or I'm with Cory, as did Chuck Schumer, who's not even on the committee. But Cory Booker came out and he said this unilaterally, all by himself. He said, there's this email that Brett Kavanaugh is part of that's talking about racial profiling. And this was in the context of 9/11 and security and TSA and all that kind of stuff. He said, there's an email where he's talking about racial profiling and you are blocking it, Mr. Grassley, from being part of the record so that I can't even ask Kavanaugh a question about it. And I'm going to release it to the press. And you can find it all over this morning. And, Kavanaugh is going off on his high-sounding, oh, we want to reach a time when, there's no consideration of race. Which means no more affirmative action, no more anti-discrimination laws. I mean, this is the direction that these guys have been proudly proclaiming that they want to go ever since Brown v. Board. There was Brown v. Board, and then there was Brown v. Board 2, in 54 and 56. And Brown v. Board 2 actually ordered forced integration, forced busing. And that was when the Republicans began this mantra. Well, actually, it was a lot of Southern Democrats at that point in time as well. It was in both parties. The Democrats repudiated it in 1965. Well, largely repudiated that part of it with the election of John Kennedy in 1960. But the Democrats said, no, I mean, we've got centuries, 400 years of not just, racial preferences and racial discrimination, but of actual genocide and slavery based on race, Native Americans and African Americans, among others. But principally those two groups. We have this long history of this, and it's going to take a little while recognizing race to clean up from this. And in this email exchange where they were discussing this broad concept of whether basically TSA agents should be able to pull people out of line because they look Middle Eastern. And Kavanaugh, part of the discussion in the email thread was, well, these people are really slick. These Saudi terrorists. The majority of the 9/11 terrorists were Saudis, of course. He was getting back on his hobby horse of, well, we need to get to the point in time where there's no consideration of race. And of course, that's the big picture that Cory Booker was objecting to. The African-American senator from New Jersey saying, wait a minute, is this really your thinking? Do you think that we don't need anti-discrimination laws? I mean, that was the essence of the Supreme Court in the case where they gutted the Voting Rights Act. Is it Shelby County, that case? I believe. In any case, that was the essence of the debate. Was, everything's fine now. Yes, the Senate voted 98-0 to renew the Voting Rights Act unanimously or nearly unanimously. I think there were a couple of dead members at the time or missing members, whatever. But it doesn't matter what the elected representatives of the people chose. What matters is what we, the 10 justices or 9 justices on the Supreme Court, I have to say, I'm getting ahead of myself here because I'm thinking that the next Democratic president needs to add one or two. But that's a whole other conversation for another time. So what Joe Connison is saying is that in addition to Kavanaugh's extreme views on abortion, on labor, I'm reading from his piece actually, Kavanaugh's established record of extreme views on abortion, labor, environmental protection, gun control, civil liberties, and voting rights. We have this whole other thing, which is what Kavanaugh basically leaked into the press and lobbied to get into the press so that Donald Trump would see it, so that Donald Trump would add him to the list of potential nominees that the Federalist Society, had come up with. Knowing, I mean, you know, Brett Kavanaugh, he's a very smart man. And apparently a very power-hungry man, willing to do pretty much anything. And apparently, by the way, a man who has a problem with money. Last year, he had $200,000 in credit card debts, according to his financial disclosure forms. This year, zero. How do you run up $200,000 in credit card debt? Number one, there are some who are concerned that he may have a gambling problem and that it might have been, he might have been laundering his gambling money with baseball tickets because he was buying tens of thousands of dollars worth of baseball tickets. Or maybe it's something else. And I would love to see somebody, you know, a member of the Senate, ask him, you know, who paid off your credit cards? Was it the Koch brothers? Was it Donald Trump? Who cleaned you up so that you could come into this hearing? And what kind of problem do you have that puts you $200,000 in debt to begin with? These are issues that speak to his character. And the reason why I just went into that digression is because I was talking about his character, him trying to get himself on the Supreme Court by pushing out into the news through surrogates the fact that he believes that a sitting president cannot be even questioned if there's evidence that that sitting president has committed a crime, a felony. Because the sitting president is so busy with such important work. As I saw in the Bush administration, George Bush was so busy, all because of 9/11. My rebuttal to that would be Donald Trump has spent one out of every 3 days since he has been president on one of his own golf courses playing golf. Are you really telling me this guy is too busy to do a deposition? This guy is too busy to answer questions about crimes he might have committed? Seriously? That's what you're trying to tell me, Brett Kavanaugh? But the point of Joe Connison's piece, and I think it's a really good point, it's a point that I've been making ever since I first noticed that Kavanaugh was trying to get his name in the press, and then a few weeks later, Trump put him on the list of potential nominees that had been originally provided to him by Joe, what's his name, the guy from the, Joe Black, I think is his name, whatever it is, who was the guy from the Federalist Society, heavily funded by the Koch brothers, among others, by the way. That, you know, when I noticed that Kavanaugh was doing this and that then Trump added him to the list, on the air, those of you who've been listening to the program for years, you heard me say it. Trump's going to pick Kavanaugh. Why? He's trying to rig his own case. He's trying to pick his own judge. He wants to have somebody in the room with the other eight Supreme Court justices arguing that they should not rule that he has to submit to questioning. Trump wants somebody in the room with the Supreme Court justices who will overturn the Nixon precedent. In the case of Nixon, the Supreme Court said yes. Well, and there's also the Paula Jones versus Bill Clinton precedent. But in U.S. v. Nixon, the Supreme Court said the president is not above the law. If a congressional committee or a court orders subpoenas, the White House tapes, he has to provide them. And Nixon, to his credit, provided them. Which, by the way, is the opposite of what's happening right now in the Kavanaugh hearings, where only 7% of Brett Kavanaugh's papers and documents have been revealed, not just to you and me, the American people, but to the Democratic members of the committee. The Republicans are holding these things and refusing to let the Democrats see them. Hundreds of thousands of documents. This is how desperate Donald Trump is to get Kavanaugh on the bench. The right-wing billionaires want Kavanaugh on the bench because he believes in this doctrine that I talked about briefly yesterday. I talked about the Chevron deference, and I talked about mens rea, you know, state of mind. These are two doctrines that they want to see put into law, the Koch brothers and the other right-wing billionaires. In the case of the Chevron deference, it means that the EPA can no longer regulate things that are not specifically mentioned in legislation, which on its face sounds reasonable, but it's totally unreasonable. It's, as I said yesterday, it's like my sticking up a 7-Eleven, and then when I get arrested saying, yeah, you know, there's specific laws against robbing banks. There's specific laws against robbing pharmacies. There's no specific law against robbing a 7-Eleven, so you have to let me go. And this is the argument that Ann Gorsuch, Neil Gorsuch's mother, made when she was Reagan's EPA administrator before she resigned in disgrace. She made this argument. It went all the way to the Supreme Court in the case of Chevron versus National Resource Defense Council, the NRDC. And she said that because the legislation that created the EPA does not mention the word mercury, the EPA cannot regulate mercury, even though mercury is a known neurotoxin that is killing and that is poisoning our children. It's in our water. It damages people. And she lost that case. The Supreme Court said no. You know, if the deference that you have to give is to the regulatory agency, unless you could prove that they're doing something out of malice or out of incompetence, you have to defer to their judgment. And the mens rea, that's the thing where the right-wing billionaires, the CEOs of corporate America want it. And by the way, mens rea was discussed this morning. I keep telling you, look out for this stuff, right? And sure enough, they brought up mens rea this morning. And that's the doctrine that if a CEO of a company says, you know, the guy running General Motors back in the day, or Ford back in the day, says, oh yeah, you could put that gas tank in the back, no problem, or put the side saddle gas tanks, General Motors and the Chevy trucks, put the side saddle gas tanks on there. It'll save us $5 a car. We'll make an extra $20 million this year. Without having the intention of turning those cars into fireballs, into torches, and killing many, many people, which happened, by the way. The mens rea argument says if he didn't intend for those people to die, you can't prosecute him.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So Trump is trying to rig his own case, and the billionaires love it because Kavanaugh is going to go along with their agenda, too. We'll be back with your calls. Welcome back. Harry in Horseshoe, Texas. Hey, Harry, thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV. What's on your mind?
Yes, Mr. Hartman, first-time caller. I very much appreciate you educating all your listeners on Free Speech TV. You are, like I am, a person who has pursued a lifetime of continuing education, and I'm quite impressed with your attention to every detail in your books.
Thank you.
As Mr. Pocan mentioned once on one of your episodes, he joined ALEC for a while just to find out what's really going on behind closed doors.
Right.
Well, I heard that a while back, a couple of years ago, and I, too, have been a member of the American Legislative Exchange Council for the past year.
Are you a legislator, Harry?
No, sir, I am not. I'm a Federal Academy graduate. And I have a lot of contacts amongst...
I thought only state legislators could be members of ALEC.
Who are also... No.
Oh, okay. Learn something new every day. Thank you.
Contribute. It's how much money you contribute and whether you happen to be a member of a certain federal academy or not and so forth and so on. And certain legal organizations also.
Sure, okay.
And often the screening is not what it should be. But anyway, make a long story short, I was wondering if you were familiar with the PR Watch article that appeared August 7th, 2018, authored by Mary Botari. Okay, in this basically, it discloses the agenda during the ALEC 45th annual meeting of legislators and corporate lobbyists at the Hilton New Orleans Riverside Hotel. I attended that. And I happened to attend a little gathering behind closed doors which discussed the draft reforming, how federal grants are provided to the state. Also, another little meeting, draft resolution to restore the division of government responsibilities between the national government and the states. resolution concerning the EPA's new source review regulation.
There you go.
Which you just alluded to.
Yep.
How they are going to require the EPA to be bound by legislation.
Yep.
I also attended another little meeting, Medical Freedom Act. I encourage all of your listeners, like I usually do, to research the American Legislative Exchange Council, American City County Exchange, because in these meetings, they lay out the groundwork for legislation they're going to hand over to their duplicitous legislators, both representatives and senators, at both the national level and state level. And this is what we as citizens and concerned citizens of this country need to watch out for before it is introduced. This is their game plan. This little Medical Freedom Act is going to gut the Affordable Care Act. I can tell you that. Okay?
Yep.
And I don't want to get too much further, but I encourage everybody that's listening that really wants to see what Alec and the ACCEC, American City Council Exchange, are up to.
Yeah.
Join these organizations or somehow find out to get behind these closed doors.
Right. Harry, thank you for that. Yeah, I'm with you. Harry, thanks so much for that. And please call in again and keep us up to date on those things. I was not familiar with the PR Watch story, but I am familiar with Alec. And spot on. Everything you said, spot on. Thank you, Harry. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And, I want to just finish up some of the news of the day stuff, and then I'll be picking up your phone calls here. In Joe Connison's piece, he talks about how Trump's former attorney general, is headed to prison, Michael Cohen. His former campaign manager, Paul Manafort, heading to prison. His corporate accountant, who has signed a cooperation agreement, he's now working with the prosecutors. This is a guy who worked for Trump's daddy. He knows where all the bodies are buried. The special counsel is probing into his campaign, Trump's campaign's alleged conspiracy with agents of a foreign power, and at the very least, Russia, and perhaps other countries as well. I would want to be looking at what he's doing with Bibi Netanyahu as well, and his own alleged attempts to obstruct that investigation. His threats, his attempted obstruction of justice, and perhaps actual obstruction of justice in threatening to fire Attorney General Jeff Sessions. And now he wants to put this guy on the Supreme Court, who says, number one, the state of mind of corporate CEOs should be taken into consideration if you're going to prosecute them. Now, let's acknowledge it has been 30, 40 years outside of Enron. I think Enron was the last time we saw any corporate CEOs seriously prosecuted. Right? Jeffrey Skilling is sitting in jail right now, and Ken Lay is dead. Or is he? That's a whole other thing. But that was a long time ago, right? I mean, that was a prosecution that was begun during the Bill Clinton administration, as I recall, and followed up with George W. Bush, although I may have my timelines wrong. But it's been a long time. And he wants to make sure that that continues, Brett Kavanaugh does, by saying, this doctrine that the Koch brothers have been pushing, that if a corporate CEO makes decisions, like ExxonMobil, they decided to skimp on safety with the Exxon, with that oil rig in the Gulf of Mexico. I'm forgetting the name of it. And from Kavanaugh's point of view, the only people who should be held accountable for that was it 11 people or 15 people who were working on the rig who died. Not the executives who made the decision to cut back on safety, because they didn't intend to kill people. So that's the mens rea thing. The Chevron deference. He wants to do away with the Chevron deference, which says that a regulatory agency, if the EPA is told clean up the air, they spend years bringing in authorities and experts to determine how do you clean up the air best, what are the worst pollutants, and then they put into place regulations to do that. These guys want to blow up all of that stuff. All the things that protect us, that protect our environment, that protect our pharmaceuticals, that protect our food supply, that protect our children. They want to blow it all up. And then, of course, Kavanaugh also wants to say, and you can't go after Trump, no matter what, because he's putting me on the Supreme Court.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
And then on top of this, we've got an active coup going on inside the Trump administration, which I ranted about at length in the last hour. We'll pick up your calls after the break. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. Thomas Neuberger has just published a piece over Common Dreams that I find absolutely fascinating, and I want to bring it to your attention. He suggests that the Democrats in the Senate, and this would require 100% unanimity among the Democrats. So they would have to get Joe Manchin on board, they would have to get Heidi Heitkamp on board, they would have to get Claire McCaskill on board, which is something I'm skeptical of. But, you know, these are urgent times, as the saying goes. And in fact, these are the times that try men and women's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will now no doubt shrink from the service of their country, but tyranny like hell is not easily conquered. Okay, Thomas Paine. Anyhow, what he's suggesting is that the Democrats should say to the Republicans, Chuck Schumer should say to Mitch McConnell, if you guys will not postpone this nomination until the next legislative session, January of 2019, which is a mere, 5 months away? If I'm doing my math right, something like that, 4 or 5 months away. If you will not postpone these hearings and this vote on this nominee until after the election, we are going to leave town. We will leave one senator in the Capitol who every single time the Republicans call for unanimous consent will deny it. The Republicans can still get done everything they want because they have, you know, they got 50 votes, 51 votes now. John Kyle has been sworn in for John McCain's seat. The Republicans can do whatever they're going to do, but they're going to do it without our complicity, without our cooperation, without us going along. We are going to make a loud public statement. This is not normal. This is not right. This guy Kavanaugh, according to Nancy McLean's book, Democracy in Chains, which was written several years ago, she pointed out Brett Kavanaugh was handpicked by the Koch brothers or by their network as one of the guys who's going to do what the billionaire class wants. And we're not having it. So let's see where it goes. Margie in Houston, Texas. Hey, Margie, what's on your mind today?
Yes, hi, Tom. I've been listening to the proceedings, and I'm wondering, will Kavanaugh go through no matter what because the Republicans have the numbers, or are the Democrats just stalling for Mueller?
The number one thing that could prevent this, setting aside any Democrats, you know, flipping, which is a possibility, but the number one thing is if his extreme views on abortion are made so clear that Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, the senators from Maine and Alaska, the Republican senators, can no longer pretend that his assurance that Roe v. Wade is settled law, which of course is obvious to everybody, is of consequence. I mean, to say when you're not on the Supreme Court, to say something is subtle law, therefore can't rule against it. Well, of course. But once you're on the Supreme Court, the Supreme Court routinely overturns settled law. In fact, Roe v. Wade was overturning settled law. So, that's what it's going to take. Is it going to take Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins both to say no?
Awesome.
And if they, if they both say no, and Joe Manchin and Heidi Heitkamp and Claire McCaskill don't say yes, then you've got it. So there is, I get all the pundits on TV are going, oh, this is a done deal. I don't think it's a done deal. And if it is a done deal, I think that the Democrats should exact a punishment for it, essentially. I agree with Thomas Neuberger, who I believe used to write under the name Gaius Publius, that the Democrats should just, take a stand here, make an issue out of this. Thank you for the call. Rocco, listening to Progressive Voices in Rosendale, New York. Hey, Rocco, what's up?
How you doing? I kind of noticed something when you were talking about a coup. There was a coup that was started in the 30s. The businessmen had failed the coup, against FDR right after he put through his plan, Social Security and whatnot.
Yeah.
So this has been going on for quite some time. And then it got, you know, brought back to the fore when Reagan busted unions, and now we have this. Can't say it wasn't coming.
Yeah, there have been attempts. I mean, Smedley Butler called that thing out. There were a bunch of industrialists. It looks like, you know, Rockefeller and Mellon and a few others came to Smedley Butler, who was at that point in time sort of the General Patton, the John McCain of America. He was the most decorated war hero in American history. He was a Marine general. At that time, he was retired, but he still held that in very, very high esteem, made a minor living traveling around the country, speaking to veterans groups, and was a celebrity. And they came to Smedley Butler, and they said, we've got this group, and I'm forgetting the name of the group. It was like a veterans organization that had about 500,000 members that was extremely right-wing. And they said, we will march on Washington, D.C., we will take the White House, we will imprison the president and vice president, and we will install an acting president in their place if you will lead the troops. And Smedley Butler called them out, and Congress began to investigate this. Democrats in Congress were outraged, and FDR stopped the investigation because he did not want anybody to think that that was even possible. He was very concerned about it getting out. So that was an attempted coup that didn't work. And the Reagan administration, you know, you had I'm assuming you're talking about General what's his name saying, I'm in charge here.
Yeah, but
he was not actually in charge. I mean, I don't know of any time in history when there has actually been a coup, and we have one right now. This guy's bragging about it in the New York Times. So I think this is a big danger. This is a huge red flag. Rago, thanks for the call. Well said. Michael in Fairfax, Virginia. Hey, Michael, thanks for listening to SiriusXM. What's up?
Hey, Tom. This is like an amazing thing. We agree with each other. I listen to you almost every day, and
you're a conservative?
I agree with anything. I am. But I'm not crazy about it or anything. I don't want to yell at you or any of that kind of stuff. But no, we completely agree. Like, this is a huge thing. I was telling my wife last night, I said, you know, I didn't like Obama at all, but man, it would have bothered me to my core to find out that there was somebody in his administration trying to sort of thwart his efforts to do, you know, the things that I didn't particularly agree with. But duly elected president, man, it's a very bad path to go down.
Yes,
and I'm glad that you recognize that.
Yeah, and this is not a partisan issue. I mean, this is the thing that horrified me yesterday, watching all these commentators on television going, "Oh yeah, great, the Republic is safe now." No,
you know, it's actually more in peril than it has been.
Absolutely. Wait until Elizabeth Warren is president, and a bunch of people in her administration say, "Oh, we're not going to allow her to have socialized medicine."
Absolutely. And then what does that do for, like, the vetting process of hiring people and all these things? It just turns things so on its head.
Yes.
It's very, very dangerous.
This is a crime against our republic.
It really is absolutely a crime against our republic. One more thing I wanted to bring up with you. You were talking about the, affirmative action and all these things. I have a unique situation. So my daughter's half black. My wife is black. And her cousin, who lives down in North Carolina, is half Asian and half white. So we're mixed family, as it were. But do you know that when they take the SATs, that my daughter will automatically get 450 points more than her cousin will?
I did not know that, and I'm not sure I believe that.
Her cousin will get docked 100 and some points, I think 140 points, and my daughter will get awarded 310 points just for being black.
Yeah. I think that, you know, this is the rationale for this, Michael. Michael, I can't verify the numbers that you're stating, but I know that, I mean, this is the essence of some of the affirmative action stuff. And I confess I've become addicted to the New York Times mini crossword puzzles. And I've been, you know, in the afternoon just, you know, solving the five or six of them a day just for fun.
The manager writes those, actually.
Yeah, okay. And one of the things that really has become clear to me is that there are so many cultural references in those things that if I was not part of, quote, mainstream culture, which is basically white culture in America, I wouldn't know the answers to. And on the other hand, you know, if the questions had been questions that were something that was, you know, if I lived in an inner city or if I grew up black, I would more likely know the answers to different questions than those. I mean, there is a cultural bias in our testing system. And oh, so we have been attempting
why do they say
to resolve that.
Asian kids are automatically going to do so much better.
I would say by and large because the discrimination against Asian kids.
Question on the SATs is probably more interesting.
1880s was the last time that you had the, you know, government aggressively discriminating against Asians. Now, I realize that Asians in many parts of the country are discriminated against, and it's a terrible thing. But not essentially ghettoized, not segregated the way that African Americans have been. And as a result of that, you've got tests that still bear what I think you could legitimately call substantial racial bias. And you know, something should be done about that, and something appropriate should be done about that. So, Michael, I get it that you don't agree with that. You're making the argument, basically, and thank you for the call. You're making the argument, basically, that Kavanaugh was making in this exchange that Cory Booker just publicized, which is everything should be race neutral. Well, once everybody is equal, fine. But everybody is not equal. They're not equal in educational opportunity. They're not equal in the schools that they're getting. They're not equal. You know, it's just we're not all equal.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back with more of your calls. Well, actually, we're going to check in with Talk Media News in about 4 minutes, so stick around. And welcome back. Let's see here. Sandy watching us on Free Speech TV in Newcastle, Wyoming. Hey, Sandy, what's on your mind?
Confirmation hearings.
And I'm sorry, Sandy. Start again.
I've been watching the confirmation hearings on Kavanaugh.
Uh-huh.
And quite a number of the senators have brought up the fact that this is not, there is no precedent for what is happening.
That's correct.
What they are doing is trying to install a non-judicial precedent at the highest level.
I agree.
They've been, you know, this is how the courts are manipulated, is through non-judicial precedents, and nobody seems to want to talk about it. I haven't heard anyone.
Yeah, it's an excellent point. I mean, this is the second breaking of precedent that Mitch McConnell has overseen now, and Chuck Grassley is conspiring with him in this. The first was denying Merrick Garland even meetings and hearings, and the second now is denying 93%, denying to give it to the Democrats, 93% of the record of Brett Kavanaugh's career as a judge and as a lawyer.
Also, did you notice that Grassley called you the Democrat Party?
I heard that this morning. My head exploded. I was like, oh my God. You know, Grassley is doing that on, you know, from the podium. I was amazed that one of the Democrats didn't call him out and say, Senator, there is no such thing as a Democrat Party. It does not exist. It was Joe McCarthy's slur. He encouraged Republicans to use it and always emphasized the word rat. But when Thomas Jefferson named this party, he called it the Democratic Republican Party. And in the 1820s, when they dropped the word Republican, they renamed it the Democratic Party. And it has been the Democratic Party ever since roughly 1800.
Well, there needs to be more focus on the non-judicial precedents, because that's how all of the courts are being manipulated.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Yep, I absolutely agree. Well said. Thank you very much, Sandy, for the call. Jonathan in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Jonathan.
Hi, Tom. Tom, I know who wrote the letter.
Who is that?
John Miller.
Who's John Miller?
Well, we don't know John Miller.
No.
Well, I know it's John Miller because John Miller is Donald Trump's alter ego. When he used to pretend.
Oh, so you think Trump wrote the letter or had somebody write the letter and leaked it so that he could do this whole kabuki theater to distract us from Kavanaugh melting down?
Well, look, I'm half joking, right? But when you think about the resistance, what you think about someone who's fighting resistance is someone who's selfless and self-effacing. This whole letter was highly egotistical and it was very concerned. The person who was writing the letter was mostly concerned with how they were being perceived.
Right.
And also, it's bizarre to think that, you know, the resistance gives a wink and a nod to the wealthy and the powerful with tax breaks and deregulation, and, you know, I mean, that's like...
Right. It's a joke.
It just sounds so bizarre. So I'm going with John Miller.
That's very interesting. You know, I can't rebut that. If Donald Trump used, you know, the Reichstag fire, there's a considerable amount of evidence that the Nazis actually helped Marius van der Lubbe set the German Parliament building on fire in 1933. And if Trump or people close to Trump participated in writing this letter to be a Reichstag fire, essentially, to be an inciting incident that Trump could use to begin a massive purge of government and maybe even to declare martial law.
Well, if you're really trying to protect people, why would you want to uncover your identity?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Jonathan, thank you for the call. Boy, food for thought. We're going to check in with Bob Ney in just a second. Stick around. Let's check in with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world today. On the line with us, first of all, this report brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and Loving What You Do, Alan Ratner's new book. On the line with us is the author of Sideswiped, former congressman from Ohio, Bob Ney. Bob, welcome back.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
So what's at the top of your hit parade of the news of the day?
Well, I'll get to the op-ed in a second, but I did want to mention North Korea because we hear a lot of controversy back and forth of what's going on. And the North Korean president, Kim Jong-un, has again reaffirmed about the denuclearization, highest levels, North and South are meeting. So I think that in itself continues on, but I don't know if you saw the statement. It kind of makes me chuckle because there was a statement, and this is Chung Yu-yong, a special envoy from South Korea, who told reporters that Kim Jong-un stressed, quote, "He's never talked negative about President Trump to his staff or anyone else." He wanted to make that clear.
Oh, really? What about on Twitter when he called him a dotard?
Well, yeah. So, but I just thought it was fascinating that all of a sudden they're like, hey, by the way, you know, everybody else in the world is saying something. We aren't. So I just thought that was quite fascinating message, I think, probably to President Trump.
Trump and dictators seem to get along really well.
Something's working.
Yeah.
Like
so I saw
this
issue. On this letter to the editor of the New York Times, I just had a caller who suggested that Trump or somebody close to Trump may have actually placed this letter as an excuse to bring about a purge of, quote, disloyal elements within the White House, a purge that might be like the Night of the Long Knives. I mean, you know, only instead of killing people, imprisoning people. But the purge is the next step in a takeover of a government. That seems a little extreme, a little paranoid for me. But I am of the opinion that this person has declared a coup. And I was horrified yesterday to see all these commentators on the television networks going, oh, well, thank God the Republic is safe. You know, they're restraining his worst impulses. Can you imagine if they hadn't been there, how bad things would be? And I'm like, wait a minute, what happened? What would those same people have said if during the Obama administration somebody had come out and said, we're staging a coup, we're the loyal resistance inside the Obama administration, and we're going to prevent him from doing that socialized medicine Obamacare thing? Or if Elizabeth Warren gets elected and they come out and say, we're taking over the executive branch, we're preventing President Warren from doing socialized medicine, we would be aghast. I mean, this is a crime. Back to you, Bob.
Oh, yes. I mean, but look, I'm not I am not a conspiracy theorist, but I also have been in the government long enough to know there are some conspiracies. We can go back in history, the King David Hotel bombing, okay? I mean, we can just go back where people did things for different motives to achieve what they wanted for support.
Yeah, that was where Menachem Begin blew up the hotel to kick off basically the war that produced Israel.
Right. Right, and of course it was that they were disguised as Arabs and had an Arab make a phone call. It was going to be bombed, and so, you know, throughout history things have happened.
Well, and this is what the Nazis did with the Reichstag in 1933. They burned down their own parliament building in order to get Hitler in as chancellor.
Correct, and it's interesting about the caller because there's something that bothered me with this entire thing all morning long since 4:30 when I got up to compile the news. And here's what bothered me. First of all, I read it over. There's a couple of things. It looks to me, too, like somebody that is really, really loves free trade was behind part of this, it looks like it. because it's mentioned. Also, there is absolutely no way the vice president wrote this. They threw in a term he uses.
Lodestar,
Right, in order to make it look like it, he wrote it. He's not that dumb to put that in there.
Right.
Now, somebody at a level below him could have. Number two, I don't think this was the janitor trying to call himself the high-level White House person. Somebody at a higher level did do this. Here's what bugs me about this, and I've got to yield towards the caller when it comes to this particular maybe conspiracy. Something bothers me. If you read this letter, the person is like trying to save America. The person's all willing to do this. And, yeah, it's timing. I think he might have talked to Bob Woodward, but it's not, you know, the timing of it was not just to promote a book. I don't believe that. Here's the problem. If I'm in the White House and I'm this person, and I really, really believe in my heart, which you read in that letter, that the president's okay in some things, but we got to stop him. This is my job. I'm going to save America. Why on earth would I not keep on the down low in the White House and achieve my objective, which is what I want to do? Why would I dare do an op-ed? I have to lean towards the caller. I am thinking this was done, and now they're saying call the New York Times. I think this was done with the knowledge of the White House. Now, who, president or whatever, I don't know. I've got to yield to that because since this morning it's bugged me. If this guy is that, or gal is that dedicated to saving this country, why would you blow your cover when you can continue to manipulate the White House to, quote, save the country?
Wow. And you were a serving member of Congress for years and years. I mean, it's not like, you know, you're part of the lunatic fringe. Go ahead, Bob.
I don't mind sharing for a real quick second. Pages were huffing chemicals at one point in time. Speaker Hastert's office wanted to keep it quiet. I set up with my press secretary a very elaborate way for me to be asked questions and my press secretary to be asked questions, and we initiated that all to be leaked.
Wow. So you created a conspiracy to create a leak.
Yes, sir.
Amazing. Bob Ney, former congressman from Ohio, author of Sideswiped, with our report from Talk Media News. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
It is always so informative talking with you. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.